going deep. I feel like Kalo on the Miami Heat. The words I speak off this sheet are like a three-peat. I don't just hop on a track, I bring running cleats. I'm a player for real, more than an athlete. Let my mama tell it, could have ran for the Senate. Instead I penned it for Donovan Bennett. I'm cemented, this a deep dive. In your headphones or a long drive, up close and personal, just like you courtside. There ain't no out of bounds here, no offsides. We going live in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You are now tuned in to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
Thanks so much, Capital. It is the Going Deep podcast, and we're going to go deep on all things NFL conference championships. We have three more games of football left. I mean, real football. The Pro Bowl at this point is not even an actual tackle football game. Three games left of real football before the season. If you can tell in my voice, I'm quite sad because I love the games, but I am quite excited because we've got two outstanding matchups. And no matter where the scenarios go in terms of who wins these next two and makes it to New Orleans for the Super Bowl, I think we have a outstanding Super Bowl ahead of us. Styles make fights and some real good contrast in styles. But this postseason is going to be all about legacy, I believe. And the Chiefs are going for a three-peat. Got Patrick Mahomes wildly 16-3 in his career in the playoffs. Like, that's an outstanding regular season record for any quarterback. That's what he does against the best competition when it matters the most. And Andy Reid, he's in the 300 wins club. He's now 47 wins behind Don Shula, 33 behind Bill Belichick, and 24 behind George Halas, which you only really care about if you are a Chicago Bears fan. And there is a serious undercard and main event to the games. No disrespect to Commanders fans. I wish they were still called the Washington Football Team. And Philadelphia Eagles fans. I don't know if they're greasing the poles in Philly just in case they win. But everyone wants to see Bills versus Chiefs. Certainly many Canadian Bills fans want to see that, and many Taylor Swift fans around the world. But it feels like, in terms of this rivalry, this is the rubber match because we've seen them play so much, essentially twice a year, every year, once in the regular season and once in the postseason. But this, again, is a legacy game. For Patrick Mahomes, maybe a little bit, if he can go to another Super Bowl and potentially win one, but more so for Josh Allen. His potential moment to step up and become elite. Josh Allen in the regular season against the Chiefs, lights out. 4-1 record, 25.8 points per game, 296 offensive yards per game, 13 TDs, 4 turnovers. He's 0-3 in the playoffs against the Chiefs, but his numbers are still lights out. 28 points per game, 342.3 offensive yards per game, 9 total TDs, and only 1 turnover. But quarterbacks' wins are a stat that we use to adjudicate them. Will Josh Allen be able to get over the hump? As much as this game is super exciting and there is a new kids on the block aspect of the Bills, could they beat that old bully? There's only 14 Bills who have played an AFC championship game. 43 Chiefs have been this far before. All of the news this week leading up to the game has not been about the game. It's been about coaches and who is going to be coaching where and who's taking an interview where and who is potentially being deceitful to who and who is losing their job because of whom. A lot to make sense of. And I think all of these things are connected. Not only is it fascinating to find out who's going to be coaching where, but I think that's going to be instructive as to who might be playing quarterback where. We're going to get into all of that on the Going Deep podcast right now. A couple things. If you want to hear our thoughts on what happened in the week in football in real time, and most of it is still evergreen and still relates, listen to the Fan Checkdown with myself and Show Ali. But if you want to make sense of what has happened, depending on when you're listening to this, in the last 24 to 72 hours, Cynthia Freeland is the best person to talk to. She is an NFL data scientist working for the NFL Network. She breaks down all things around the numbers of the game, and she joins us. So let's go deep on the numbers of the coaching cycle and the conference championships. So I don't know about you, but I wasn't expecting late on a Thursday night for where in the world is Liam Cohen to be blowing up all of the group chats on my phone. But here we are. What do you make of that evolving story? How did you react to it? And what do you know?
Well, I think the first thing to know is that Liam Cohen brings with him a really good network of other, you know, coordinators, position coaches, et cetera, that I think are valuable to what the Jaguars believe they have. And they obviously have Trevor Lawrence. That's a really big deal. And, you know, I mean, to be fair, like, it's kind of amazing to give him the opportunity to choose his own GM, but that's a very attractive deal. I guess I just think that it's the network, because as of right now, like, that's the thing people don't realize. Like, you can get the head coach you want. That's fantastic. But who they bring with them is a way bigger indicator of success, at least early on, than other things, right? Like, look at what happened with Dan Campbell. He just lost both of his coordinators, you know, three seasons into this thing.
So now Baker Mayfield goes into another season with a new coordinator. Tampa backed up to Brink's truck in the hopes of keeping Cohen, and they seemed to think that they did. Where do you think the Bucs go from here?
You know, I love Todd Bowles. I'm like a biggest Todd Bowles fan, and a lot of people want to work for him. Also, Baker had such a good season that I believe, you know, now it feels like an attractive thing to have Baker, not a, you know, workaround or something that you have to accommodate. He's done a great job, and there's a lot of things to like in that division, being that there's a number of, you know, rebuilds going on there. So it's I would say the word easier. It's a more winnable division. How about that? And in a more winnable division, everybody likes success, right? Everybody likes winning. You can go to a team that's potentially in a better position with a quarterback like Dallas, but that's a pretty darn hard division considering both of the NFC championship teams are coming from the NFC East. So, you know, there's pluses and minuses for everything, but I kind of view it like that.
So we did have an era where Bill Parcells famously said, if you're going to make me make the meal, well, you might as well let me buy the groceries, paraphrasing, where coaches wanted to be GMs. Now we've gotten to a place where, whether it's Las Vegas or Jacksonville, in a coaching search, the front office decided we need to remove the GM in order to get the coach we want. How did we get here?
Well, I think visibility into what GMs do is a big deal. Before, we didn't really have, like, you know, you kind of had more involvement from owners. Now, as owners are, you know, owners are less involved, like not the old owners, not like a Jerry Jones, but like a, you know, David Tepper, for example. I don't think he's getting in the draft room trying to tell anyone who to pick. But I'm looking at across the league and how it works. And I mean, the success of these coaches, like the Sean Payton example in Denver, is a really great kind of modern football example where the coach, I'm not saying that, you know, he you know, had all of the GM responsibilities, but they are saddled with a crazy contract. I know they worked together to pick the right people. And look at them. They went to the playoffs, and I don't think anyone was kind of, you know, expecting that ahead of the season. And now it just kind of reinforces this notion that if you get the right coach, then the GM can really do the right things for them, and it kind of puts the power back in the hands of the coach.
You're talking about coaching and owners who are involved. Think of the Johnsons, naturally, in New York with the Jets. And I'm super excited for Aaron Glenn, but I'm also puzzled. In their search, they interviewed 16 people, none of the offensive gurus that have been the flavor of the month in the league of late. Everything I've heard about why they hired Aaron Glenn sounds very similar to why they hired Rex Ryan and Todd Bowles and Robert Saleh, a defensive coach, when they haven't been able to fix the quarterback scenario. Are you surprised, not in necessarily the hire, but the process in New York?
Yeah, I mean, I guess to me, you know, it's just like when you hire people for a job in the regular world. Like, if you're interviewing that many people, it could either mean to me two things. It either means you don't exactly know what you're looking for, or it means that you're trying to information gather. So getting pulling resources from the brain power of all of these different coaches coming in so that you kind of reignite what you believe and what your system is once you get there. So that's just, again, I don't have any inside, you know, my insight is as an outsider in this world. So in that particular team specifically. So like I said, it's either, you know, they don't really have a good sense of what they want, or they're trying to, you know, get some info.
Okay. I want you to make sense for me as a Cowboys fan, what the Dallas Cowboys search means, because outside of Kellen Moore, who they know well, and they've in the past fired, they are talking to all candidates that nobody else is talking to. It's almost as if they're shopping vintage right now and going back to the 90s and the 2000s. What does their search tell us about what direction they might be going with that franchise?
I think it seems a little vintage, but I also think the Deion stuff is quite real. I mean, you're looking at a vintage renaissance. I mean, the Raiders just hired Pete Carroll. So if you're looking at all the different ways that teams are built, it feels like you're either going very new or very throwback. And I think for the Cowboys, a lot of it will come down to what the belief of, you know, they have a couple of really key players who are quite vocal. And I do think that the Cowboys brain trust, the people who are involved in the Cowboys, you know, Michael Irvin included, like those type of people, I think they have an opinion here too. And I think it would actually be quite interesting to see what happens if a Deion goes there.
We're in the content business, so I personally would love it for many reasons. The Patriots got their guy first, which means they can go after coordinators first, and Josh McDaniels back as the OC for the third time. Drake May now gets four coordinators in 4 years. When you look at that appointment and that potential marriage, what sticks out to you?
I really like Drake May. I think he's he had a more promising season than a lot of people thought. I think harnessing the things that he does well, that deep pass, his ability to really be tough. He's a tough kid. That is very Vrabel-like. It is a good fit with Mike Vrabel. I'm curious, you know, Josh McDaniels obviously has a long history as a Patriots offensive coordinator. He's not the same type of quarterback as a Tom Brady. So adapting the game plan so that Drake May can succeed will be interesting, given that, you know, you look at that roster and I'm like, okay, but who's he going to, you know, who's the reliable wide receiver here? Who's the pass? I'm confused about their O-line, and it's not a great O-line class. So is it who they pick to surround Drake May with will be really, really key. But again, I'm just a little leery, because as I look at what Josh McDaniels has been best with, it's a different skill set than Drake May, which nothing wrong there, but the mobility there for Drake is much different.
That's a great point. Look at the Lions and the brain drain that's happening in that organization, and now they need two new coordinators. In terms of having continued success, do you think one will be tougher to replace than the other?
I do. I think that it's going to be tougher to replace here's the thing. There's not a lot of the Lions players that are going to be replaced in this one. So luckily they have some long-term deals in place for their O-line, which is very key. It's not to say that Ben Johnson's impact and, you know, the way that he crafted this offense isn't as important, but there's more decisions to be made on the defense. So fixing the defense, all of those injured reserve players, figuring out I don't know how they all play together. You know why? Because they never did. Like, there were so many people who didn't even get a chance to play together. So creating the right mix from who's there once people get healthy, that's a harder task. It's just more of a task than the continuity that's already involved in staying with that same sort of offensive structure.
You're so good at not only breaking down the numbers, but synthesizing them, making them make sense for us. As we look ahead to some outstanding matchups in the conference championships, what numbers in each game jumps out to you?
You know, look, in each game, so starting with the NFC, to me, you know, it's and no shade to Jalen Hurts here, it's Jaden Daniels versus Saquon Barkley, if you're thinking about the headliners in this one. And I say that specifically because Saquon Barkley, we see him break for these really long passes. He has 13, 10-plus yard runs, you know, in the past five games, whatever, something crazy like that. Two of them went for touchdowns last week. The explosive nature that he has. Now, in the past five games, you've seen him get a little bit stopped more often, five games that he's played, whatever. See him get stopped. So it's either boom or bust, right? A little bit more boom or bust because teams are specifically spending a lot of resources to stop him. So that's interesting. But then on the other side, it's very interesting to see this moment with Jaden Daniels without his right tackle. You know, Sam Cosmi now not playing and a replacement right tackle against this Eagles defense. Yowza, that seems very tough. And is the rookie who I think it's an advantage for him to not know how big this moment is, but I think that will be more difficult given that this defense can create a lot of different looks. Vic Fangio will craft a system that, you know, brings pressure. Like in some games, you know, in their two game sample size, you know, he blitzed him a lot one time, didn't blitz him basically at all another. And that makes it hard for a rookie to be able to see what's going on, especially if, you know, the O-line is going to allow him not to be able to use it'll it, with the right tackle being banged up and replaced, it could potentially mean like more pressure and not as efficient of a run game for him. So that's, to me, it's figuring out those two things. And then in the other game, this game, we've seen this one before, and this is a good one. And I'm curious to see, will Patrick Mahomes be able to take advantage? We saw Taylor Rapp has been ruled out. That's a massive loss for the Bills defense. Will Travis Kelce just light it up again? Because now you have Taylor Rapp out. That creates a much different scenario for Travis Kelce, who his difference when he faces the Bills and, you know, being defended by a defensive back and a linebacker, it's like three more yards per reception when it's a linebacker. That's tough sledding. And then on the other side, Josh Allen, he's probably our MVP this season, very likely. And a lot of reason is because he doesn't turn the ball over. If Josh Allen doesn't turn the ball over, even as good as the Chiefs defense is, it's still going to come down to, you know, I think it's going to be a very, very close game. And again, it's a good one. We're very lucky as fans to have this as our last game before the Super Bowl.
Yeah, both teams, not just their quarterbacks, but their teams, incredible on how little they've turned over the ball, especially down the stretch and in the postseason. Studio shows, everyone says the key to the game, no turnovers, field position. It's like, okay, thanks, genius. But it really is such a big difference maker. Can you put in perspective just how far Allen has come from the player who maybe judgment wasn't necessarily his greatest strength to now it is his greatest strength?
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Josh Allen is our perception of what he was going to be able to do this season without Stephon Diggs was probably incorrect, right? I don't think there's anyone in their wide receiving court, no shade to Khalil Shakir, but I'm not scared of anyone there, right? You're not sitting there being like, uh-oh, you better watch out. You know, like that's, you know, Travis Kelce's coming away. There's no one who you feel that way about, right? So what he's done is he's been able to create just enough. And if you look at the breakdown, it's either a deep pass or it's a short pass. He doesn't really throw anything to the intermediate level. So short pass, in this case, likely to a tight end, or deep pass, potentially to your Shakir, to your Keon Coleman. You know, that is going to be an interesting note in this matchup. And what's really changed about Josh or evolved around Josh is that he understands space significantly better. When he has his panics, and everyone does, let's be clear, he's not throwing it to the other team. He's getting rid of it. He's, you know, using his legs and sliding in a way that's not necessarily losing yards or losing as many yards, for example.
Chiefs going for a three-peat. Most teams who have tried, didn't even make it to the conference championship, never mind the Super Bowl, or even won it, which they're looking to do. If you had to rank the three teams left based off of everything that you've seen and looked at, who has the best chance at knocking them off between the three teams left in the field?
I hate to say it, but I think the Bills. just from the familiarity and the fact that, I mean, Von Miller was brought to that team specifically to try to get after, you know, to get after Patrick Mahomes. And with the left side of the O-line being what it is for the Chiefs, that could be an area that's tough.
And before I let you go, as I'm sitting in Canada in minus temperatures, such a big aspect of these games often is the weather, especially when teams from the Northeast or the Midwest end up with home field advantage. What do your models say, as much as fans we love snow games and extreme weather games, what do your models say about the impact of the temperatures on the outcomes, on scoring, and what might we expect this week if we are paying attention?
Well, if you get really cold, you see something like what you had with Mark Andrews, right, where the ball becomes harder to catch, more wonky things happen, and defenses then become more of a predictor of success than even run games or offenses. But typically the formula in cold is defense first, offense in the run game second, and that can include your quarterback running, so it's not just, you know, running back, and then after that, shorter passes. So if I'm looking at where there's some advantages lie, like, to me, that means Eagles have a pretty darn good chance because the run game, the defense, and also they're really good at short passes, and that has been where Washington's had a bunch of problems. And then on the other side, it's interesting with the Chiefs because the Bills, sneaky number that maybe we, you know, I'm sure people bring it up, but I feel like we don't talk about it enough. Their defense is 29th on third down, and you're going to give Patrick Mahomes extra rope on third down, doesn't seem like it's going to go well.
Wow, that is a big one, because the Chiefs and Mahomes, especially in the postseason, are so good on third down. It's almost like they play to get to third down, where, you know, other coordinators are playing to not get to third down. Okay, before I let you go, and thank you so much for your time, and this is selfish, we've seen the growth of the weekly pick'em pools in the playoffs, where you got to pick a player that week and accrue points and fill out your lineup. So, well, give me one player from each team that you think be wise to have in your lineup this weekend based off of the matchups.
I'm going to give you a sneaky upside one, because is that the spirit of it? Like, you need to pick with, like, are you looking for upside, or are you looking for who's going to score the most?
Both, because you can only pick one. You can only pick a player once throughout the postseason, so you got to time it up strategically well.
Okay. I like where this is headed. I think you might, like, on Washington, I might consider Austin Ekeler in this matchup. I think, I know that sounds crazy, but I think those short passes are going to be huge, so I like an Austin Ekeler moment. And you could look at a Zach Ertz, too, if you wanted to be more sneaky in those. I'm picking a Commander because I don't think you'll be able to do them next week, just so we're clear. and then in the other game, you know, this is the moment where I would spend my Josh Allen capital. Ooh. Right there, all the way.
Okay. I love it. Consider it done. Locked in. Thank you so much. Thank you in advance for those picks. Thank you for your time. Enjoy the games. It's always a pleasure getting your perspective before them.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, and stay warm.
Thanks so much to Cynthia Freeland. Again, you can find her on the NFL Network. If you want to follow her, it's at C Freeland, C-F-R-E-L-U-N-D. At Numbers Game is also where you can find the breakdown of all of her sports data. She's on IG and TikTok and X and Blue Sky. So give her a follow. At C Freeland is the handle. Okay, now that we've got a handle on that, let's take a break, reset, and come back with more football talk after the break.
My name is Lucille Bryan.
I'm Clifton Bryan.
My grandson has a show.
And I'm so happy that you're listening to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
I'm so glad that he had a show. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Grandma and Granddad. And we go from NFL Network to NFL.com. And I'm hoping for Commanders Chiefs. And maybe it's just confirmation bias, but I've sought out someone who believes that could happen. And that is Eric Edholm. He is a writer. He's doing coverage of all things NFL, including the draft. So I'm a draft nerd. I'm going to get into some draft talk with him. He's giving us power rankings nonstop, which is so fun to consume, even when there's only four teams left. But I want to bounce around and talk to Eric about a little bit of everything, including the fact that Senior Bowl, something that he's covering, is going to include a Canadian once again, Taylor Algersma from Wilfrid Laurier University, the Hec Creighton Trophy winner. That's a big deal, not only for Taylor and for the Laurier program. It's a big deal for U Sports. It's a big deal for Canada. And I want to figure out what Eric makes of Taylor's chance to make an impression on NFL evaluators. All that and more with Eric Edholm. Let's go deep. I love your work because you do a great job of highlighting pro and college. And I actually want to start there because the two blend into each other so much now. The NCAA championship and having that game in between some big playoff games. I feel like this year, despite two big programs, this game didn't really have a lot of heat, a lot of juice moving into it. Do you feel the same? Are there ways that both of these big entities can work together so that's not the case?
Yeah, that's a great question. Obviously, the NFL is king. I think it's going to dominate the airwaves and dominate the conversation, at least here in the States, and I'm guessing there as well. But yeah, I mean, obviously college football has to kind of find its niche, and you're right. I mean, Notre Dame, Ohio State, you can't really find two bigger blue blood programs than that. I think, you know, obviously in those markets, certainly in the Midwest, there were big ratings and big attention for that. You know, there's also plenty of people who dislike the school. So, you know, perhaps that hurt a little bit, but it's always going to be second. And I think the problem was that there really wasn't that buzzy quarterback or player. Both quarterbacks are fine players, but you know, there just wasn't that one guy in the final game that really kind of got people juiced up. But nonetheless, I mean, the hope is that the 12-game playoff for college football kind of expands its reach, you know, kind of its grasp on the TV market and just the, you know, the potential for buzz. I think there's some kinks to work out. It doesn't sound like they're going to have major sort of structural changes to the format of the playoffs. I think a lot of people sort of felt like the top four seeds may have been overseeded given the way it's given to conference champions and not necessarily the four best teams. So, you know, I think a lot of people feel like reseeding might be the best way to go, but these are kind of nuts and bolts, granular level specifics that I don't know that'll have a major effect on the ratings and such, but yeah, I think it's got an uphill climb to kind of crack into the NFL buzz a little bit.
Well, when you look at the playoffs, some of the best players are not eligible for this upcoming draft, but there's always a couple players who will impact what happens in the draft in the spring. Who did you have your eye on in terms of players who affirmed or maybe even helped their stock?
Yeah, no, I mean, Ohio State definitely has a bigger allotment of 2025 draft prospects. You know, one player who didn't play, Josh Simmons, the left tackle, still is highly regarded, but, you know, obviously not being in the game. And another player, Benjamin Morrison for Notre Dame, could be a first or second round pick. He's been out since midseason as well. So we didn't get the best of the best, so to speak, but Jack Sawyer, defensive end, was a huge hero against Texas, played well in the finals too. Very well regarded, you know, don't know exactly where he's going to go, but probably in that top 50 area as well. JT Tua Moalau, his running mate essentially on the other side, I think will be maybe a little bit lower than that. Same with Donovan Jackson, who played left tackle for Simmons. You know, Notre Dame is a player, Xavier Watts, who I think will do pretty well for himself. Got a tackle better, but a really impactful safety, guy with a nose for the ball, had a big breakup near the end zone. And again, I mentioned the two quarterbacks, Riley Leonard and Will Howard. I think Howard helped himself out, you know, especially in a league where you have running quarterbacks. You know, he's more of a design run guy, I think, works with power more in the Josh Allen way than the Lamar Jackson way, I would say. He's never going to be that, but I think you could see a Josh Allen-type starter kit with Howard. And again, with maybe a lower ceiling, but that's the kind of model I would say he sort of fits. Whereas Riley Leonard might be a little bit more, a little more limited as a thrower, but still has that fine running ability. You know, there were some good prospects to watch, and obviously the more tape scouts have, the better it is for their evaluations. Hopefully I'll be seeing both down at the Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama, which is next week. It's a pre-draft event that's you know, often populated by some of the best prospects. Underclassmen are now eligible too. So, yeah, we'll see a number of those guys down there as well. And, you know, scouts will always take more tape on players.
Drafts, historically, the classes are judged by their quarterbacks, good, bad, or indifferent, coming off a great class. The QBs this year, how would you compare them to the QBs last year? If you had to rank them all being in the same class, where would these guys fit in from what we saw a year ago?
Yeah, it is definitely, at least to me, not as top-heavy a group. You know, last year we were gifted the rare talent of Caleb Williams. I still believe in him. Obviously, after a trying year, now he's got Ben Johnson. I think he'll do fine. Jaden Daniels speaks for himself. You know, his rookie year continues, and we'll see him on Sunday. Anybody who's still paying attention is going to, if they haven't seen him yet, it's going to be an odd of his talents. But obviously he's the overwhelming favorite for offensive rookie of the year. And number three, Drake May. I mean, look, you know, even though it took him a little while to get in the lineup, he showed he belonged. And I think with a, you know, with Mike Vrabel there and maybe a better surrounding cast next year, better offensive line, receivers, you know, he's going to be up there in that conversation too. I don't think any of the quarterbacks in this year's class are on that level. I don't think I would treat them with the same level of desire, you know, if I was a GM and, you know, feel the need to trade up or, you know, make a franchise-altering move to get either Shedeur Sanders, Deion Sanders' son, Cam Ward, who's, you know, gone from Incarnate Word to Washington State and to Miami and had a terrific final season for the Hurricanes. Both great players. I think those are sort of roundly viewed as the top two, with a number of others, including Alabama's Jalen Milroe. You know, we mentioned the national title quarterbacks, Jackson Dart from Ole Miss, and a handful of other guys who are going to be, I think, able to help their stocks out. I don't know that any of them will be able to help their cases out as much as, say, Michael Penix last year or Bo Nix, both guys taken at the, you know, the back end of that top six in the first half of the first round. If I were restacking these two classes together, you know, I would probably have three, maybe four quarterbacks ahead of anybody in this group. So that's not to say that they won't be drafted high. I think there's a real good chance that one or two ends up in the top five. But, you know, if you're the New England Patriots, for instance, and obviously you have May already and you're hoping two quarterbacks go ahead of you, so one of those elite players sort of drops down to you, you know, they may regret winning in Week 18 against Buffalo because that knocked them out of the number one spot and into the fourth spot. And just as kind of a demonstration, you know, I would say there's a chance that they may be picking among, you know, there may be at least all but one quarterback on the board at that point. And, you know, that could kind of foil their draft plans a little. So I don't know that we're going to have a repeat of last year's is basically what I'm saying.
I get it. You know, you mentioned the Senior Bowl. Canadians are really excited for Taylor Elgersma, a U Sports player, to be participating.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, well familiar with Curtis Rourke and what he did the Big Ten. When you look at QBs coming from different places, maybe not having the same pedigree from a top high school market in playing, you know, 3 or 4 years in a Power Four conference, how open do you think front offices are looking at a quarterback who took a bit of a different path, like in a very different way, these two Canadians did?
Yeah, and I have, you know, Curtis's story has been told a little bit, obviously, because of his path through Indiana, and, you know, won't be able to practice down there because of an injury he suffered during the season. But, you know, he helped kind of elevate himself into an NFL prospect, and I think we'll be drafted by somebody on, you know, maybe in the later parts of the draft. But, yeah, the other kid you're talking about who's just announced for the Senior Bowl this morning, it was an exciting announcement, I think, for a lot of us who follow the draft closely. And I haven't watched him closely enough to have a real opinion on him yet, which also adds to the excitement. You know, you get to kind of come in with a blank slate, if you will, and just sort of watch him from the feet all the way up to the head and say, what do we have here? I know he's a big kid. I know he, you know, throws the ball exceptionally well. How well does he move in the pocket? How quickly does he process things, and how good are his touch and placement? And, you know, when you're playing next to and on the same team as SEC and Big Ten quarterbacks, guys who've played at the highest levels of college football, you know, that's a real apple-to-apple test right there. Now you're viewing them against, you know, the perceived best of the best, or at least close to that level. So, always fascinating to sort of put them all in a place like that, teach them a playbook and cram it down as fast as they can. And, you know, the concepts are new. I never judge the quarterbacks on the first day. I really don't. Yeah, you can see how they, you know, how they deliver the football and what their mechanics are like. But, you know, I watched Josh Allen struggle mightily down there day one, you know, overthrowing guys and, you know, kind of looking out of place. Russell Wilson, if you want to go back to him at the Senior Bowl, didn't even think he had a great week overall, but I loved him as a quarterback. So, back to your question about the kind of the roundabout ways the guys can get to this level. There was a quarterback, Tyson Bagent, who went to Shippensburg College, a little small Division II school, and he set all kinds of records there. Now, he went undrafted, but the Bears snapped him up. And, you know, even though Caleb Williams is most certainly the future in Chicago, there's something to Bagent. I mean, he played for Justin Fields 2 years ago, and handled himself pretty well, you know, outside of a couple bad throws against the Saints. He ended up starting 3 or 4 games and acquitted himself very well. Threw very well, great tight spiral, seemed to be in command, had played a lot of college football, had a lot going for him besides the experience. And the moment didn't look too big for him. So I was a little surprised somebody didn't draft him. I thought he might at least be a seventh-round flyer, but didn't end up the case. But I think if you look back, he probably should have been. And, you know, every case that happens like that, it kind of gives more credence to the smaller school players. They're fewer and farther between these days because of the transfer portal, right? We see people portal up and level up to higher levels of college football, but there are always going to be suspicious coaches and evaluators, people who aren't sure that those players can make the jump. This is the ultimate stage for that. So I credit Jim Nagy, the director of the game, for, you know, having an open mind on prospects who, you know, may not have taken the same path as everybody else.
You know, you look at those prospects and you're evaluating them. Success leads clues at times. And I wonder what we can learn from the 4 QBs playing in the NFL this weekend in the conference championship. All have outplayed where they were drafted, quite frankly, all mobile, but they've all done it a bit differently. Is there anything that sticks out to you as to why these guys have been relatively successful and what we can learn from them when we're evaluating what has become lottery tickets at the quarterback position in the draft?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great way to frame it. I mean, I think Josh Allen had a lot of suspicion coming out of Wyoming, especially given the fact that, you know, his numbers were unimpressive. He would routinely overthrow receivers and, you know, sort of look skittish at times in the pocket. But when you really sort of peered in on him, there was so much to work with. And his play was a lot better when he had more talent around him his junior year. His final year of college, there wasn't an NFL player that I think he was teammates with. Maybe one. It's certainly not on offense, but point being, you know, same thing happened to Jordan Love at Utah State. His junior year had some NFL talent around him. Those guys graduated his senior year. He struggled, you know, and there was a coaching change as well. So, you know, you can always take away lessons to draft traits over production, or, you know, kind of remember who they're working with. And let's not assume that everybody has kind of an even playing field here. And, You know, you look at Jalen Hurts, obviously took a different path too. You know, went to Alabama, was a freshman starter, got benched in favor of Tua Tagovailoa, you know, stayed a year, and then went to Oklahoma and kind of showed out in what's regarded as a little bit of a gimmicky offense. But, you know, if you have a coach who believes in tailoring an offense to a quarterback's strengths and you pull it off, I mean, that's the result right there. You can get a quarterback with different sort of skill set. Now, obviously, Jaden went number two overall. I don't think there was a ton of doubt. It's funny to think that, you know, obviously of those, all the guys remaining, he might have been the one that felt like he had the most backers. You know, even Mahomes, when he came out, I think there was a little bit of surprise that, you know, that the Chiefs traded up as boldly as they did with Alex Smith already in place and would remain the starter for another year. You know, that was a little bit of a surprise at the time, and I think people felt like, hey, this Brett Favre hero ball won't work in the NFL. You know, like it works for one or two guys, and he may not be one of the two, but I think it's done okay for him, right? I think it's his success has paid off. So I think that the reminders are these. Quarterbacks come in all different sizes and shapes, and this is a great era because I think people have started to throw away some of those preconceived notions of what a quarterback looks like and how they're supposed to throw the ball and what they, you know, what their strengths and weaknesses should be and all that. So, you know, I think there's more of an open-mindedness in the scouting communities these days. And, you know, all four guys, even though they are great throwers and very athletic, they all kind of do it in a little bit of a different way. And that's what's cool about scouting for me. We get a different class every single year and new traits to evaluate, and it makes it like a little puzzle, like a little sort of logic problem. How do we solve this conundrum and crack open this nut and figure out exactly what we've got?
Well, every off season, people think they've won it based off of how the draft goes and how that evaluation goes. Bears fans have won the offseason, you know, back-to-back years, and that they wanted Caleb Williams and they got him, and now they wanted Ben Johnson and they got him. They were chosen, when he had lots of options. The marriage that you speak of between play caller and quarterback, and that one specifically, how do you see that going? Because, I mean, it's not that long ago that they thought they had it with Nagy and Trubisky, and we know how that works. How do you see this marriage between these two working?
Yeah, I mean, Trubisky was always a curiosity for me because he started 13 college games, and he had, you know, I would say 8 good ones, you know. So there you had to kind of convince yourself with him, and it took a little bit. I mean, again, the tools were there, but, you know, did he have it between the ears? Nobody really knew. Plus, with Matt Nagy, I mean, in retrospect, even though that first year brought a lot of excitement, you know, a lot of trick plays, a lot of buzz in the building, you know, those things quickly wore off. And, you know, working for Andy Reid can be a spectacular experience for a young coach. He's one of the greatest offensive minds of our generation or any generation. And, you know, I think his sort of handle on things, being able to, you know, sort of have his imprint on the entire organization, kind of hurts these guys at the same time because Andy is so good at balancing all these things. But when you put a talented offensive coordinator and a talented quarterback together, the assumption is it's going to work. These guys are going to figure it out together. Obviously, Cliff Kingsbury and you know, Watson or Daniels, I mean, sorry, Watson. Jaden Daniels were a tremendous mix this year. But, you know, Shane Waldron and Thomas Brown and Caleb Williams didn't work. I'm sure all those guys, you know, have skill sets that work in the NFL, but what Williams needs to do is play within the system more. And I think Ben will help sort of design up free yards, easy yards for him to take, more favorable downs and distances, hopefully fewer sacks, you know, less hero ball, less Caleb feeling the need to put the cape on and rescue the team out of these bad situations, some of which he put them in. He kept his interceptions down. You have to love that. You know, even though his accuracy was scattershot at times, you know, I think he understood kind of the basics there. And I think for Ben, it's not just about the fancy play calls and all that, but it's about, working with what the Bears have, building that offensive line further, and giving Caleb more easy looks to where he doesn't feel that need to play the YOLO ball, you know, and that's just not going to work consistently in the NFL, I don't think. So that's the biggest thing. I think he's got a chance to do it. People say, well, he's worked with Jared Goff. That's a different type of quarterback. But if anything, I think this kind of opens things up more. You know, as long as Williams stays within himself and doesn't try to, you know, put the ball in harm's way too much, minimize the risk-taking or know when to take those risks, I think they'll both be okay over time.
Well, it's so interesting you mentioned the lack of games Trubisky had, because I was thinking about it recently, you know, in relation to Anthony Richardson, and there was a time when the more games you played in college, it was almost held against you. Like, what's wrong with you? Why didn't you leave early?
Yeah, right.
You're clearly not that good. And now, whether it is the transfer portal, as you mentioned, or, you know, players sitting early or getting lots of reps and making a lot of passes like Mahomes did in college, you look at Mahomes and Daniels and, you know, guys who are doing at a high level, they've played a lot of football, Bo Nix. So I wonder if the pendulum swings the other way and you're looking for a closer to just add water product than a piece of clay that you can mold. The thing, though, is you're not just giving us great evaluation of these players and prospects. You're also giving us power rankings that we can argue over. And if I'm reading into them, is it fair to say that you could believe we might see a Commanders-Chiefs Super Bowl?
I think there's a chance. I do. Yeah. I mean, I know Eagles fans aren't I should be careful how loudly I say this, but I may prove to be spectacularly wrong, right? I mean, the Commanders' defense certainly has a long way to go, and the offensive line just lost Samuel Cosmi, who's been a key cog of what they've done up front, and maybe the run game stalls out, and, you know, Daniels is left to kind of pick up the pieces. But, you know, the way they went in there, the confidence with which they went into Detroit, and, you know, getting the three and out to start the game, scoring a touchdown on their first drive, taking the bull by the horn, so to speak. They were almost out-lionsing the Lions in that regard. I think they have an opportunity to march into Philadelphia and do the same thing. They've already beaten this team, put up big yards against them in the last meeting in Washington, but they've come so far since when they first played the Eagles in Philadelphia. I think facing a team with Jalen Hurts that's, you know, we don't know what kind of physical condition he's in right now. How bad is his knee? He's going to play. I mean, I'm convinced he will be out there for the first snap on Sunday. But, you know, if he's not able to go, or if he's severely limited like he was in the second half against the Rams, you know, the one thing the Commanders did against the Lions and the one thing they've really been able to kind of do is rush the passer. Hasn't always been consistent, but they have a little bit of juice. And, you know, Fowler and Frankie Louvu and these guys, certainly the D-tackle combo inside. I mean, they have some pressure players up front. So if that happens and Jalen Hurts is having trouble kind of navigating the pocket and finding escape hatches, then I absolutely think there's a chance. But I do admit that it's going to probably take some things to line up, and I understand the Eagles are the favorites for a reason. But I think there's a chance we get our first rookie starting in a Super Bowl, given the way the Commanders have really kind of come to life.
I would love it. I don't know if anyone wants to see Eagles Chiefs again. I don't think that New Orleans can handle Bills Eagles just from a fan base standpoint. Commanders Chiefs might be a nice mix of the old and some new blood. Either way, we'll be reading your work to get us ready for it and for us to have a better understanding of it. And then take us through, as we're missing live games, keeping our love for the sport via the games that happen with these prospects and leading up to the NFL draft. Thank you so much for taking time, and enjoy the games.
Pleasure's mine. Thanks for having me. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks so much to Eric. You can give him a follow as well at Eric_@home. EDHOLM is how you spell the last name. Again, please like, favorite, share, and subscribe as soon as you are done following him. And not just to this podcast, Going Deep, but also to the Fan NFL Checkdown, which we bring you across the Sportsnet Radio Network, Monday to Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern live, or on demand right afterwards, wherever you get your podcasts. We're going to be doing that right up until the Super Bowl and beyond. So give us a follow if you haven't already. Thanks so much. Talk soon.